Man, this is a cool episode, you guys. I can't believe this actually happened. This is all because of my dear friend Shelby, who's a high-ranking member of the secret society that I'm lucky enough to be a part of, the Enchanted Booty Forest. If not for him, I wouldn't have had the surreal experience of sitting in a tiny house on the outskirts of Nashville with the lead singer of the Flaming Lips, an experience so surreal and odd that it made me start thinking that perhaps Elon Musk and Nick Bostrom are correct. That we exist in some simulated universe, some kind of heaven realm. Holy shit, Wang Coyne from the Flaming Lips. It actually happened. I can't believe it. This must be paradise. We're gonna dive right into this glorious, miraculous episode. But first, some quick business. Have you ever wondered what it might be like to make love upon the warm, soft stomach of a giant celestial puppy? Well, worry no longer. You can find out by getting yourself a new mattress from Casper.com. Right now, if you go to Casper.com/Family Hour and enter an offer code Family Hour, you will get $50 towards a brand new mattress. The Casper, it's an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. The product design features a marriage between foam layers for ideal firmness, just the right sink, and just the right bounce. That means it's good for humping. Affordable price because Casper sells direct to consumers, free shipping and returns to the US and Canada, 100-night trial with free, no-hassle returns if you're not happy. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly become the internet's favorite mattress. Designed and developed and assembled in the USA. Remember, go to Casper.com/Family Hour. Use offer code Family Hour and you get $50 off this incredible mattress. Why are you sleeping on a thing that feels like the knotted back of a Kandarian demon in some Sumerian hell pit when you could be sleeping on a beautiful, brand new Casper mattress? Remember, Casper.com/Family Hour. Use offer code Family Hour and you'll get $50 off a brand new mattress. Much thanks to those of you who have been subscribing to the DTFH over at Patreon.com. It's the number one way for you to support this podcast. Go to Patreon.com/Family Hour and for a mere $5 a month, you will have early access to all interviews as well as access to rants, weird burping stuff that I made on my modular synths and strange rambling things that I'm too afraid to upload onto the main feed. Also, you'll become my patron, my master, my goddess. I will have to suck upon your toes while you spank me with palm fronds and call me your bitch. I can't wait. Let me be your slave. Become my patron. Go to patreon.com/DTFH. Do it. Also, thanks to those of you who have been using our Amazon link located at duncantrussell.com. If you go through that link and buy something on Amazon, they'll give us a very small percentage of whatever that thing is that you may buy. And listen, you got to check out modular synthesizers. I mean, I know I sound insane, but just look them up on YouTube. This is my newest obsession. I'm really into this company called Make Noise. They produce these incredible sound machines. You can get them on Amazon.com. Just go through the link first, won't you? It's a great way for you to support the DTFH. We also have a shop with t-shirts, posters, and stickers. But you don't have to do any of that, friends. I'm just happy that you are listening to the podcast and letting us spend some time together in the strange, beautiful waters of the World Wide Web. So without further ado, everyone, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, the lead singer of the Flaming Lips, Wayne Coyne. Wayne Coyne, welcome to the show.
All right, here we are. I mean, we have to say that we're in a really expensive hotel that you snuck your... Did you sneak them in, or are you allowed to
they
have the dogs?
They let the dogs in.
Hotels
they,
are cool these days because you get to have your dogs, and they don't care. And
We're in an expensive hotel in Nashville,
that's right,
Tennessee, and we're looking out at the other side. We can't see the sunset, but we're seeing the residue because we're way up high, 14th floor.
Yes.
In the shiny buildings downtown. It's beautiful.
But and I think it's important to say how I ended up in this hotel.
Well... I wasn't going to bring it up. It's
embarrassing, but I think we need to say it.
Unprofessional.
Yes.
You were so...
I was unprofessional.
On
no, I was not. Wayne Coyne.
Whatever that drug that was going
on. We can't do that.
You were so high on that.
It was not because of that, though. It was... I'll
right.
tell you.
It was an acceptable accident. You were traveling all day and...
I left my charger at Will Oldham's house. So it's this crazy convergence, which is that, I mean, and on these are the kinds of things, I'm sure this is for you, the life that you must have, I think must be a series of odd synchronicities and oddness. But for me, to be in a tiny house outside of Nashville and to be sitting in the tiny house with Wayne Coyne, that's enough to send many a man tumbling off the precipice of sanity. You know, you could go nuts.
Now you say tiny house as if the world knows what that is. A tiny house, it's not just... Actually, a tiny house. It's a thing.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a movement. It's this idea that we don't need to live in some kind of. We don't need all this space. Like we're in this. I got two beds, two dogs.
I know. I agree. But I thought it was quite small.
Oh, it was.
You know,
it was literally. It was a tiny house.
I mean, if you had which you don't have, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I mean, if you had your girlfriend there with you, that seemed like it's too small. For a dude and his girlfriend to be in there at the same time.
No, you couldn't live with a family.
That's a single man sort of domain.
That's
am I right?
You're writing a manifesto in that thing. You go there to write a manifesto.
Exactly.
Yeah. And even that would be uncomfortable. Like even writing a manifesto in there, there's not much of a desk. You'd have to figure out. You'd have to sit in bed with like a lap desk, I guess.
Yeah.
It was tiny.
Yeah.
But again,
but maybe it's great and it's affordable and it's simple and for, you know, maybe it's, I mean, I thought it was interesting. It just seemed, even for me and you, after a while, it's like, hey, man, this is kind of like being in a jail of some kind. And I'm stuck with you. In my jail cell, which isn't that bad. But
how do you think I felt, man? It was not only.
But we had our dogs, and you had your dogs. They're wonderful.
They were Wayne Coyne. Wayne.
Yeah, I'm
takes this heroic leap into pure unknowingness. Drives to it. Comes to a tiny house.
No, it's not pure enough. I mean, I know you kind of.
Yes.
Yeah, and you're traveling across country. I mean, you're not a complete stranger or anything, you know. We've been trying to do this for a long time, and then when I do finally get there, you've left the cord at Will's house. Is that
that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. But we started this conversation before you pressed the button.
Yes.
And then you slightly turned into this other radio personality guy.
Am I doing that? Did my personality change?
No, not at all. Really, not at all. Which,
I need to know
which I'm
like
that. Come on, step it up a little.
You
bit.
Want me to be
no,
more of a...
No, but we were like, I was asking you, have you ever been to therapy? And you said, wait a minute, hold on, let me press the button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
I've been
to therapy. I went to therapy a little bit, but I don't go regularly. I think you should. It's a great thing to do, but I don't do it. Do you go to therapy?
No, but I mean, I get to talk about myself all the time to strangers who are not that invested in, you know what I mean? So, and I think... If you didn't have that and you weren't asked about things in your life and you didn't get to talk about them and they were heavy things, you would want to have someone. And so I think, you know, doing interviews, as you probably, maybe you were about to say this, I mean, in a sense, it has a therapeutic.
Absolutely.
Articulating is different than thinking and writing and even talking. Articulating, you know, this speed by which we're answering each other.
Yes.
We're not really thinking about what we're going to say.
No.
Perhaps we should, but we don't. You know, it's coming out quicker than we're even thinking it, you know?
Right.
And that has some kind of, there is something in that therapeutic, that's therapeutic to your being, that you're this flow of whatever. So, So I'm in therapy with you right now.
Oh, great.
In a sense, and you're in it with me.
Well, I think I'm more in it with you. You are a healing force.
Well, thank you.
You seem to have this kind of like, You're anyone who's been to your shows, knows that this thing happens in there, which we talked about last night.
We did. We did.
Dive back into that.
Okay.
But it's not just your shows. As I was hanging out with you, and I realized not only do you, are you not, you don't seem even slightly annoyed that I'm unable to record this podcast. You spend at least an hour with me, and we got in this great conversation. But
it was a great conversation. I mean, you're an interesting, cool guy. I mean, I've been around you other times when we haven't talked that much, but we talked enough and done things that we weren't thinking, oh, this is for a podcast.
So yeah.
It was very much just hanging out with you, and you traveled across country and you talked with Will. You've got to, I mean, I was ready to hear your stories anyway.
Yeah, so, but yeah. They've yeah. heard my stories. We want to hear about you. And when I'm, what the feeling I get from you is that when people get around you, you start like reconfiguring them in a kind of sweet, positive way, but also a kind of wild way, you know? And it's beautiful, but it's also, it's beautiful and it's healing, but it's not what you would necessarily call therapy, you know? It's
I see. Okay. You know, yeah.
It's some, but do you get this feeling that, do you feel, I mean, it sounds so schlocky when I say it, but when you're putting all this energy out in the world, is that the intention behind it?
Well, I mean, when I was with you last night, I was utterly fascinated with the things you'd say and then what it would lead to. And I would be asking you questions like, oh, my God, this is really your life. We talked about your girlfriend that you had and then your separation and all that.
Yes.
And to talk to someone, which you're like this, that just is being honest right there. They don't have an answer that they want to give. They haven't thought about it a billion times. They haven't asked about it a billion times. And you're just saying it. It's. I mean, I think it's fascinating.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a joy.
I mean, it's a thrill. So, I mean, you know, I think that's why you have such a great show.
Thanks, Wayne.
I think there's something that's pulling the truth and the urgency out of people. And so, yeah.
Well, God, that's amazing. I mean, I felt the same way around you. I just felt like I, when you left, I didn't want you to leave. And then I thought, oh, of course you don't want him to leave. It's Wayne Coyne. He's a rock star. It's the Flaming Lips. Everyone wants him to stay. So, yeah, and what we talked about so many cool things last night, but I sure would love to circle back to a few of them.
Yeah, okay.
And,
there you go.
And it kind of goes back to what I was saying before, which is that a lot of my friends and my experience when I go to a Flaming Lips show, it can be a transformative experience. And I think last night I was kind of trying to fish out of you some intention or some a mission statement from you or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It felt like you were telling me, no, that's not necessarily what.
Well, I mean, you know, all these, this thing that we do now as the Flaming Lips as a show, you know, it's a long, long, you know, evolution of little ideas put together, things that, you know, you would have tried that failed, things that you didn't know you were doing that worked accidentally, and all those little things, being that we get to kind of have, you know, it's not control, but it's like we're the ones creating the show, whatever, and using all those to their most effective thing.
Yeah.
You know, and having a slight confidence that I think this would work. If we do these things and the audience is ready to listen to us and pay attention to us and be with us here, if we do these things, it's going to be fun, and we're all going to be in it together. And then we can have these, you know, these emotional things with the songs and singing together and all that. But that's not a mission. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think it's more, you know, there's a certain thing that we like to do, and then it just works out that there's a certain thing that the audience likes, and those can be kind of together.
Right, yeah.
But it wouldn't be a mission, you know, in that way. We wouldn't have ever thought, this is what we want to say to the world. I think when we're doing it, it feels like, oh, we're so lucky we get to sing our songs to people, you know. And I say it still all the time. It's like, you know, people who really know music and people, you know, a lot of people have musical minds that aren't musicians, you know. They're musical anyway, even though they're not pursuing music. They can tell I can't really sing. You know, they're like, and I'm like, I know, I'm not really a singer, but I'm allowed to sing, you know, these Flaming Lips songs.
Wow.
And I'm just like the luckiest person ever in that way, because, you know, the audience is like, we know you can't sing, but there's something that allows you to be a singer. And I could be a singer for no other anything ever, but I can sing Flaming Lips songs. And that's where I sort of feel like this is a special, like, man, I got a special duty here, you know.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
man.
It's wonderful.
It's wonderful.
That people allow me, let me sing to them, you know.
Well, we love it.
Well, and I love it too. I mean, you know, it's right. such a great thing, but you know, a lot of people are singers and they think, "Oh, well, I can really sing." But I never think that.
That's nuts, man. Never in a million years would I have thought that when you think about yourself, you're like, "Well, I'm not a singer." I am not a singer. Like, I'm not a singer.
If right.
I'm not a singer in the way somebody who doesn't have a spine is not a jogger. I think if you tried,
you might find a way to say, oh, if I sing in this way, it works right. for me, which is what I do. You know, right. I can't do very much, but I can do this one area and doing my thing, it's passable. I mean, it works for people that like our music, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, but, yeah.
It's
yeah.
beautiful. You're a singer. I mean, if you're not a singer, God, all of us, we're doomed.
Well, I mean, I think there's probably a, you know, a description or an identity that comes with someone that you think, well, he's standing up there on a stage singing. He must be like kind of a show off or this yeah. confident, you know, and I could see where most singers in the world, you know, are probably exactly that. Not in a bad way, but they feel like, oh, you want to hear me sing because yeah. I'm a good singer. Well, I'm not like that. You know, I came into it not really starting as a singer, but then singing like, well, punk rock stuff, you know, and
right.
I'm like, well, you know, John Lydon doesn't sing that well, and you know Anthony right. Kiedis from Chili Peppers doesn't sing that well. I can do it, you
right.
know, or Henry Rollins, you know, those types of singers. And then I wanted to start to do music that was more emotional. And then it's like, but you can't really sing. And I'm like, I know, but I want to.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I'm at still. I mean, I still think of those guys in some ways as my heroes. Even the guy from Duran Duran, what's his name? You know, like these guys who can't really sing, but they decided, I'm going to be a singer.
I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump out there and make a thing regardless of whatever the problem is.
But, you know, but music is sacred ground in some way, you know, and, you know, to go out there and say, well, you're listening and I'm the guy, that, you know, you're going to listen to me tonight. That's why I think it's different at a Flaming Lips show, because it really isn't. You know, we never go out there and be like, you're the audience.
No.
You know, we're us. It's like, we're all in this together.
It's participatory, for
and,
sure.
And that is the absolute truth from the heart of our minds that we try to say, you know, it's not about us. Because we're horrible introverts. We talked about that last night a little
bit
of like, ooh, you know, we're not saying, oh, pay attention to us. We know that that's the deal. You know, you're there and you're going to watch us do our thing. But it's not. We need your attention to make us feel good about ourselves. It's just a different trip. But I don't know if it comes across that way. I mean, I could see where years ago you could say, go to see Beyonce, and then next night see the Flaming Lips. You'd be like, nothing very similar.
Right. Yeah, sure.
But now you might go see Beyonce one night and see the Flaming Lips next night and say, well, there's some similarities. You know, it's a big show. We make it seem like at the end of the every song, you know, you're going to clap and this is going to be a big deal. You're the audience, we're the stars, and you know, but underneath all that, there's nothing. Those two are not anything alike. You know, Beyonce knows, I got the butt, I got the hair, I got the voice.
Yeah, right.
It's going to work.
Yeah, right.
And then she's got lasers and stuff too.
Yeah.
You know, and you just go blammo.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm done. You win. Absolutely. I want to be in the audience and I want you.
I've never been to Beyonce. I've never been to one of her shows.
It's amazing. You just had, But the Flaming Lips are, you know, even though those same things may happen, we're never coming across like, we're the lips. And you're just dunking.
No, it doesn't feel like that. No, it feels like a ritual. It feels like
we get to do this thing together. Yeah.
It feels religious in the good sense of the word.
I agree. We always say it's like a religious cartoon. You know, it's like, it doesn't, it's not, there's nothing overly heavy, even though it's heavy, but it's all in music and it's all in a show. It's
right.
not, you know, we're not really. We're not trying to change you. You're here. You're at our show. You're the perfect, wonderful person anyway. There's nothing for us to change about you. You're here. Cool. You know, but I agree with you. And we're getting that same thing when we're playing. You know, when it's working, we all feel like, oh, man, we've created this thing together.
Yeah.
Because without the audience's energy and that love, it really is love. You know, when people are paying attention to each other and urging each other to do this thing, do this marvelous thing. I mean, that's, you know, and to go up there and to know, all right, we're purposely going to do this thing so we feel this thing and it works. It's wonderful.
It's love.
It is. It is
absolutely
love. You guys
are channeling love. It's like,
I mean, most performers in a sense do. I mean,
sure.
You go see people, it's not something we do that nobody else does, but it is that.
What do you think love is?
Love, it's not tough to define because we all know what it is. It's tough to put it into words.
Yeah.
You know, but it is. It's like you just, you know, you like someone, you want someone, you want this thing, and then it slips over into a deeper category. You know, unknowingly, it's become part of you. You know, I always say, like, if you love someone, you're doing that for you. You know, liking them is for them, you know. But if you love them, it's for you because it gets to be in a special part of your mind.
Yeah,
and you
sure.
And you want that. You know, you want to put it in your mind so it's like, oh, it's so special, even though it's probably a, you know, a selfish thing or whatever. But, you know, we all know people like that. It's like, you know, I love them, but I don't like them. Right?
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Sometimes your relatives or whoever, you know, you love them, but you don't like them. But there's other people that, you know, you like them, but you don't really love them, you know.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. But can you love everyone?
No, I don't. Why could you? I mean, why, you know, I mean,
I think you could.
Well, I think you could only, it would only really be love if you had experiences with them. And that's why I think it, when I say it goes into this other category, I don't think it's you doing it. I think there's a certain, you know, amount that you start smelling and seeing and experiencing and thinking about and considering, and then that plump, you know, it's a, but what do you call the amount? Once the amount is so much.
I know what you mean. It's like a scale. It goes,
then it plumps. And you don't know it, but suddenly they're part of what you think about. They're part of these millions of things that you're able to think about. And if something happened to them, it would hurt you. Their pain is your pain then. But if you don't really know someone, you know, them being here or not being here, them being in pain or not being in pain, we have, you know, a empathy. And, you know, we understand their thing. But you know it's not really affecting you. You're drinking your coffee, reading your, you know, your internets or whatever it is you're doing without being that affected.
Yeah, sure.
When something has plopped into the love category, you know, it is you. You know, their pain is your pain. Their love is, their joy is your joy.
Can it go back once it plumps into love?
Of course, yeah.
So you can fall out of love?
Yeah, luckily, yeah. Otherwise, it would be, you know, I mean, when my mother died, I mean, I knew it wasn't like a sudden thing, but it's, you know, it climaxes into like a very sad, devastating thing. But she, you know, didn't want us to be sad. She's like, look, I don't be sad for a while. Don't be sad the rest of your life. You got a wonderful life. Don't worry about it. And in time, you know, the sadness turns to just a profound, great memory or whatever. And you can talk about it without it killing you, which is good, you know. Otherwise, you know, your animals die. It's devastating. It's devastating. You don't want to live. But you do.
Heartbreak.
It's horrible.
You're saying if love didn't dissipate, that we would be in a constant state of heartbreak.
Yeah, because there's too many things die, and too many things reject you, and too many things you weren't right about what you thought was happening or whatever. You know, it'd just be too difficult. And
let's talk about heartbreak.
Let's do.
Don't you think
that was an evil laugh?
No, it wasn't.
I noticed that last night.
No.
I was like, oh man. Allowed that laugh to come out in any other time. Now I'm in the woods, which is where you were, you know.
Yes,
people don't realize
dark.
I took an Uber. The Uber driver was worried about me. He was...
He waited. He asked if he wanted
Yeah, are you
to
sure
wait?
You want me to drop you off? And I was like, no, I'm not sure, but I don't have a choice, you know. And he was very kind and caring.
He was authentically concerned, because who wouldn't be? He drove you
Well,
down
once he saw you, too, that raised it even more.
Yes.
Yeah. Before then, he was just worried about how far we were. And he saw you. It's, oh, Jesus. You sure you want me to leave you? And
this guy with a beard wanders out of a tiny house. He gives me the suspicious look.
Yeah.
So, heartbreak. Because we were kind of like skirting around this last night, and heartbreak is for a lot of people the worst thing that can happen outside of, you know, physical injury, maybe worse than physical injury.
To some people, for sure, and depending on the injury, sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And but heartbreak is considered by a lot of my teachers one of the most sacred things that can happen to you, because when a heartbreak happens, this is actually contact with reality. That the feeling of heartbreak, the feeling of your identity being sort of overcome by this great sense of...
Well, I suppose that can be true. I mean, I think when people are sensitive, most people that, you know, do music or do art or something, you know, they have a sensitivity that's, you know, something affects them. And if they don't have some agitation or some vehicle by which they get to play with it, then it and it's not anybody's, and it's not for good or bad. It's just, you know, this situation, I was with you, we were looking out the window and we both said, this sunset is amazing.
Yes.
You know, if we're standing here with some strangers, some people probably look at it and not think it's amazing or boring or anything. It's like, whatever, just buildings, dude.
Weather and buildings. You know?
And we look at it and it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And we think, what a great thing that we notice this beauty.
Yes.
Look, we're standing here and it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
But to another normal person that's not sensitive in the same way we
right.
are, it's like, whatever, it's dinner time, let's go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not a moment of wow, the glorious thing.
Right.
So it's our fault, you know, whatever your sensitivity is it's your dilemma to deal with it.
Yeah.
And when you, if you're sensitive and you have that deep, deep love that's guiding you and all that, and it
yeah.
goes away, I mean, you're in deep trouble, you know?
If the you're in yeah. deep trouble, but you're in deep trouble if the love is based on another person. But if
no, even animals and things. I mean, you know.
I know, but no. Yeah. I'm saying you're the love, that kind of love, which is that I love my poodle.
And what people can't see, but the poodle is right here, and we're both able to
the
pet
poodle.
What's
loves
your poodle's name?
Gatsby. And he sat in your lap, and he loves you, and he wants to be near you. But the idea is, and I really want to know your opinion about this. Is love localized? If love is localized, in other words, I have to have this poodle, a person, a sunset, a thing, an event to trigger the beautiful tilting of the scales into the universe of love, then I think we're in a desperately rough place.
What's the word localized? What do you mean?
So I mean, the idea is many times people will say, I am in love with you.
Right.
And what they really mean is you are giving me love, kind of like what you were saying before, this somewhat selfish, I'm essentially,
well,
you're a love nipple, and
I don't know about
suckling
that.
Love from
no,
you.
No, I don't, I mean, I, that's a, you know, that's an individual category, you know, like I could see with some people, if they get attention, you know, they think, oh, this must mean that they're, you know, that they're in love with me or something, and then that maybe triggers something in them, and that's, you know, it's nobody's fault, but
right.
that can, you know, those things get misread all the time, you know. I think it's best to be in love with someone that you already know, and it's been like getting into some really cold water or hot water, whatever it is that you
yeah.
want to call it. But you've gotten used to the first foot being in, and then you dip a leg in, and
yeah.
you get used to that, you know, and you're getting used to it, and you're getting more trust built up and
yeah.
more comfort built up and more, you know, just more used to the way that you are and they are.
Yes.
And then perhaps before you know it, you're all the way in. And this is good to be in here.
Yes.
You know, but if you're falling in love with people that you don't really know and you're just going in and I don't know them, here we go. It's going to be rough.
That's it. It's
I mean, rough. maybe there are times when that it doesn't turn out rough, but I mean, this is all that dealt this. It's down to your personality. I mean, your personality may be that just is the way you are, and you can't, you know, there's deep things that happen within us that we don't want to control. We have no control over it, you know, and so let it, you know, and
that's right.
Yeah.
But if I, let me ask, if I eradicated all life on earth And in the universe, somehow I had a button and I pressed it.
Right.
And all sentient life in the earth I've caused to blink out of existence.
Right.
Would there still be love?
Well, you mean like inside of you or just in the universe?
Yeah.
Once the universe is all obliterated, is love an essence
yes.
that we can't see or smell?
That's right.
No. Love is a belief. Mm. Love is a belief. That's why when people say, do I believe in UFOs? And I'm like, well, I don't really believe in anything that can exist without me believing in it. Like UFOs, if they exist, they don't need me to believe in them.
Right.
They're flying around. They're doing fine. You know, Santa Claus, if he exists, I don't need to believe in him. He's delivering
sure.
toys. But if I don't believe in love, which is just a little thing inside my mind, if I don't believe it, then it's not there. You know, so I save belief for things that wouldn't exist, like trust, like, you know, these things are only, they're just done with your mind. They can't be done without you being connected to your mind. That doesn't make any sense.
It's like your mind's the record player. Love is the record. The two have to come together. If one's not there, you're not going to have.
Well, I have trees in my yard, and I do sometimes go up to and say, I love this tree.
Yeah.
But I know the tree doesn't love me. It's a tree, you know, and oh. I think that's even better.
Blasphemy.
You know, I love the Beatles, but that's to me, that's what love is. It's like that. I love you. I'm glad that you don't have to have emotions and you don't have to have ups and downs. You don't have to be happy or sad. You can just be you. And I love you. And I don't want by loving you, I don't want to burden you, you know?
Right. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, the love is for your life to be better and happier and better because we cross paths or
yes.
something like that.
Yes. You know? Yes, yeah. Sure. Yeah. But I want to talk about this idea that tree doesn't love you, because the way I have been taught, and I love to believe it.
Right.
Believe, I guess, in
right.
italics here. But I love to believe that everything is love. Everything's made of love,
well,
and the human condition is...
For me, I think that devalues what love is then. You know, to me, love is, it's a motherfucker, and it's mm-hmm. and it's hard work, and it's mm. trying and trying and trying again, and seeing the reason why, as opposed to the reason why not. It's not, it's just here, I guess I just don't see it, or it's here and... I don't care. That tree loves me, but I got shit to do today. And that dog loves me, but I got
yeah.
shit to do today. It's not. I mean, I feel like it's a powerful thing that you're doing all the time. You're trying to make this love and be with this love and see what comes of this love that you want to be part of. It's
you're
not.
Cultivating love.
Yeah. And you're reaping the rewards of it. And you get the, you know, the bad parts of it as well. But I mean, if you're lucky, you know, the love that you create is nourishing you, which is that's the greatest human achievement ever, is this thing that I need, I can make it myself.
Mm.
You know, and you don't blame anybody and you don't wait for nobody. It's something you can do. You can love the tree. The tree doesn't
gotcha.
Have to love you.
I gotcha. That's beautiful. So
well,
you're like, it's more like you're a fountain of love. Inside of you is a fountain that can start fountaining out
well,
love.
Well, because giving love is like, it, you know, it's something that you love to do. You know,
yes.
if you love to do it, it's not like you're like being selfless. Oh, I'm sacrificing myself. I'm loving because I want to. It's my favorite thing in the world. And when it nourishes the entity or the creature or the person, whatever it is that you're loving, it even works better.
It's healing.
Yeah, and you're getting off on it. They're getting off on it. Life is great.
Love's the most healing thing. Outside of bandages and penicillin.
Well, all those things are probably invented because of love.
Right.
You know?
Oh, wow.
And caring. Love and caring.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's the progenitive force. It's where all human life comes from. I mean, obviously, we're not. Some of us are humping not for love. But, but it's the progenitive force. And
well, it is something. It is something. But I don't think it exists out there without our minds and our bodies having some attachment to each other. I think it's something in there, you know.
Right. Well,
yeah.
there's a... The, so, right. You're... Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's this, clearly there must be some two things coming together for this love thing to happen. And I want to talk about the devaluing
yes.
of love.
Yeah.
By the concept being the entire, this is the idea. The entire universe is made of love. You are made of love. And when you are falling in love, you're not falling in love. You're remembering your true identity.
Right.
That's the concept.
Right. Well, I mean, I've never thought of it like that. I guess in a sense, you know, to me that when I say devaluing, it's like, oh, I just love everybody. And it's like, well, we really don't. You mean, we don't know everybody. We don't, you know, it can only be, I guess that's what I'm saying. When it plops from being, oh, I like this and I'm interested in this and now I'm obsessed with it.
Yes,
and
sure.
All these things, they're short of love. But
sure.
You know, when you tell someone that you love them, there's always that way of saying, I love you, man.
Yeah.
And we do.
Yes.
Even we could say that to each other.
Yeah,
I love you, man.
I love you.
But I don't know you that well.
Yeah.
And if you, you know, died tonight, it would be, wow, it's just with him. It'd be a bummer. But it wouldn't be the same as if someone in my family or someone I've known for a long, long time deeply. And that's just the way it is. You know, I would know.
I wish they could see yeah. me crying right now. I wish I was filming this so they could see the hot
I know.
Tears running down my cheeks.
Yeah, I know. But that's something that we don't get to control is what I would say.
Yeah.
You know, that overwhelming feeling that's attached to us.
Okay, so
but that isn't true. Well, like when we say, you know, I love everybody, we know it's not true. It doesn't work that way because, you know, the people are going to die in the streets tonight of Nashville where we're at.
On
and
one
we're not
level,
gonna,
you
we're
can't
gonna
love
care
everyone.
About
on one level, you yeah. can't love everyone's personalities.
You wouldn't, yeah.
But this is brings us to the other thing we were talking about last night, which is this idea of there being some kind of membrane or a transcendental connective mechanism
right.
that allows
yeah.
for synchronicity to happen.
Right.
And so this thing is our true identity. Underneath all the personality and all the stuff, there is a matrix of consciousness. And
see, this is, I understand people like to believe that.
Yes.
But
you don't believe that.
Well, no. I mean, because the same, it's like me and you. I didn't know you.
Right.
I didn't feel like when we finally met each other or whatever in real life that I've known you my whole existence, Duncan. I really started to know you when Shelby talked about
yes.
us connecting. I texted you. That was one level.
Yes.
We'd have jokes back and forth.
Yes.
Another level. We'd send pictures back and forth.
Yes.
That's another level. By the time we meet each other, I kind of know you. But I didn't feel like I knew you in a cosmic way all along.
Right.
I didn't even think about you until Shelby and said connect with him. And now that you've tried and I've tried, we've probably texted each other 1,000 times.
I bet.
Without really thinking about it.
Yes.
I'm just like, hey, Duncan, I send you a yeah. picture and you send me.
The
you know
best.
I mean? Yeah. So that's not just there. You made it happen. And I made it happen.
Sure.
You made it happen. Every time we try, every time we text, every time we think about each other and say, I'm going to let them know I was thinking about them, we're building up a thing that could be like love. We care about each other.
Yes.
That's not just there. I'm not just running into someone saying, brother, I don't know you, but I love you. I'm saying, I'm beginning to know you. I'm beginning to love you.
Yes.
You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes. Yeah, I get
after
it.
Last night, I'm beginning to not love you as much. No, I'm kidding. No, no. This is the risk we take with deep love. But that's my feeling of it. It's like that you're trying and I'm trying and we're not drawn to it in the dark. We saw the movie, the Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes.
That movie, you know, where they're obsessed with this image and they want to
yeah.
go to the mountain where the UFOs are
yes.
going or whatever. That's not happening like with the human race. We don't have a true answer that we're just always trying to get to. You know, we're always answering questions. We always have new answers and that answer leads to a new understanding of, you know, things that you thought you didn't understand. You know what I mean? So I don't feel like there's a flow going that we all dip our foot into and finally we feel at home. I don't feel that way.
Wow, okay, I love it. But this is where we have a fundamental disagreement. And because I do feel, I do get that sense, I get this feeling that there is we are all part of this river of love and certainly I am not going around to people being like, I love you, brother.
Right.
But I think that if I were to work on myself enough, if I spent some time like in a deep practice, then I could anything that crossed the in front of me, I think that I could love it. And I
but
think
what but what would be the way that you loved it? By just something with your mind? Or I mean, what would be the, I mean, you know, love is fine, you know, but you have to do, there has to be some action connected to it. You know, it's like, I love my dog, but I forgot to feed it and it died. That's not love. Well, if you love your dog, you would be asking it every 10 minutes. Are you hungry? Cause I'm feeding you.
Yes.
I want to feed you.
Yeah.
That's not love.
Well, there's action in, that would yeah. go along with it too. But
but if someone is passing in front of you, there can't be love without some
knowing their personality.
No, without you, there has to be, you have to be in it. You can't just, it's not love if it's like, well, I just saw you and I love you. It's like, well, okay. You know, but you don't know anything about me and you don't, you know.
Okay, but
which is fine. It's better than saying, I mean, I would rather it just be like indifference. You know, I don't love you and I don't hate you, but we can meet in this middle ground of being, you know, positive about each other and wishing each other well. That's a great
middle ground. You would rather have an indifferent. So you would rather like
an optimistic, well-wishing indifference, not like, I don't know you and fuck you. You know, that's not, you know, it's like if something happened to you, I saw you on the street, I would go, hey, are you all right? Can I help you? I don't know what I'm getting into. You know, you might be trying to trick me. I don't know. But my instinct would be, I don't know anybody who seems like he needs help. And I would say, hey, can I help you?
Yeah, sure.
That's better than saying, I don't know you. Fuck you, buddy. Good luck. But they're both indifference. But one is, I don't know you, but I'm willing to take a chance if you need help.
Optimistic indifference.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll take it. That's pretty good. I mean, hey, that's cool. You know, I get it. I mean, again, I can only speak as someone who believes in UFOs, because not that I believe in UFOs, but
your dog, I don't know if you could tell, your dog growled when you said UFOs.
Yeah, I know. He doesn't like me talking about it, because when no one's around, I just sit and talk to my dogs about UFOs and they get really pissed. No, here he goes again, that asshole.
Well, again, it's like, you know, if the universe is infinite,
yeah,
as far as we're concerned,
sure,
and you know, this world that we live in, it turned out this way, there probably could be other worlds, and if those entities, whatever they are,
sure,
found a way to fly around and stuff, that maybe they exist and maybe they would want to visit here. But to me, all that seems like, man, that is just so far-fetched. I'm not going to spend very much of my mind even considering it. I would rather spend all of my mind, as much as I can, in the real world that I know. I know these people have problems.
Yeah.
I know these people need some help. I know these people need some help. And not care. If the UFOs are there, good. They don't need our help.
You're a realist. You're a pragmatic realist.
Well, when it comes to those sorts of things, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, being imaginative and creative and all that, that's just work. That's fun. But it's, you know, but I'm older than you as well. You know what I mean? And maybe by the time you're
older,
56, you might say, yeah, I used to believe in UFOs, but now I don't. If they're there, fine.
What I meant to say is, I know people, these Ram Dass people, who encountered this being that when you got around him, it was like the most transformative thing you've ever experienced, because when you got around him, you did know him and he knew you and he would tell you things about yourself that you have never told anyone. And it wasn't like he was saying like, I know about you to run some power game on you.
Right. Yeah.
It was like an instantaneous connective sense of like, I've known this guy for a long time. And this person is looking at you, not like, I love you in the way a parent loves you.
But they're saying, well, this is an entity from beyond, or
it's their guru, named Karoli Baba, you know, this being popped into time and like,
But this connected to the UFOs.
Oh, I'm just saying, I know people who've seen UFOs, and I know people who've seen people who theoretically can throw out unconditional love to all those in front of them. And that being said, I have never been able to achieve that state. And I haven't necessarily been in the presence of someone who's putting that out there. So it's similar to UFOs. I've met people who've swear to God they saw a thing up in the fucking sky.
And I believe them. I mean, and to them, perhaps it really is magic in a UFO. But I mean, I would say, well, you mean scientifically, or you've proven it's a UFO? I mean, right. That's a different thing. And so we're, you know, I'm all for, look, if you want to believe in Santa Claus, I'll believe in him with you. Because there's great, you know, there's great things in that belief. And that makes me think this, and it drives me to, you know, to do this or whatever. But, you know, it's like, if you really think they're real, then investigate it. Let's find out. But that's, you know, that's not part of the fun. You know, that's not that much fun to really go and see. But it just doesn't seem that likely that a UFO would have lights on it. Well, this you would see them. Why do they need lights? They've been traveling through the endless universe.
Yeah.
Lights on an airplane aren't there so they can see. You know, it's only there so other people can see them.
No, it's the humanizing of alien technology is wonderful. Hilarious.
It's just, I don't take it serious. I take it as kind of like it's fun to talk about it.
Well, this was, I did this show with Rogan a long time ago on Sci-Fi, and we went to all these UFO people, and we went to every weird thing. We went squatching. We went with big people squatching for Bigfoot. You ever gone squatching?
No. See, I mean, Bigfoot doesn't interest me as much in the big picture. I mean, I could imagine, you know, there's some creature out there. I mean, I would feel more sorry for Bigfoot, you know, than I do.
Don't feel sorry for Bigfoot, Wayne. That's
the title of this episode. I can see now. You know, don't feel sorry for Bigfoot. He's a big stinky dude, man. He'll bum out your camping trip. Yeah, yeah.
He Bigfoot. So with these squatch, what's it called? Confirmation bias. So you run into people looking for Bigfoot, and I'll tell you, here's what Bigfoot does. If Bigfoot likes you, he will put a feather in the path in the forest. So if you're walking down the forest and you see a feather, it means that Bigfoot's been checking you out, and he's like, oh, he's cool, and he puts a feather there. And so Bigfoot likes to make structures in the forest. So if you see sticks that have fallen, then that's been constructed by Bigfoot. Bigfoot can turn himself into a frog. So if you hear...
That throws up a red flag for me. See, anything that can transform itself into another entity, another, you know, shape or whatever, I'm like, well, no. I mean, I think it's a wonderful story. I think it's a great imaginative metaphor for something.
That's right.
But if you're saying it's a metaphor, I say, well, it is a great metaphor.
It's for them, it's real. But what they're doing is a really fascinating thing, which is that we have a thing that does not exist.
Yes.
And what we've done is we've taken the natural world and we've picked variables that occur in the natural world.
But again, I say it devalues the bizarre, wonderful, insane things that really do exist that you don't even bother to go look for.
Right.
How many times, you know, going through the internet, do you see that some weird one-eyed clear fish that we've never seen before? It's real.
Yes.
We don't have to make up a story. It's real. I'm still looking for Bigfoot. Fish is cool. I'm looking for Bigfoot.
That's hilarious. Yeah, you got to think 50 times weirder than Bigfoot.
And you're still looking for this thing that doesn't exist. Like, but it's like, are you really interested in how wonderful and unknown the world is? Or are you just, I'm going to find Bigfoot. Fucking kick his ass. You know what I mean? It's like, to me, it's easy to say, yeah, I'm searching for the beautiful, and you would find it.
Yeah.
You would find it in the ants crawling on the sidewalk down there. You'd find it in everything. But why do we have to go search for Bigfoot in the middle of nowhere when the trees that you're walking through are better than Bigfoot? The squirrels that are running around under your feet are better than Bigfoot already, and you just want to find Bigfoot. So that's my feeling.
It'd be amazing if we found Bigfoot and realized Bigfoot was looking for another kind of Bigfoot. It's just an endless quest.
But it'd be horrible.
But
yeah.
I got to ask.
So again, I would say, you know, it devalues all the great mysterious things that are here right now that we don't bother to search for because there's not a story and it doesn't elicit this. Dude, I'm on a higher plane because I believe there's Bigfoot and UFOs, and you know, it's like, no, it's like if they're there, they're fine without me. I don't need to go search for them. And
this is actually, I gotta say, man, this is like, if of all the people that I would think UFOs would have attempted to contact,
Right.
I could see you being one of them. And I wanted to ask you, these years of touring and these years of being in this incredibly rare form of existence, which is to be a rock star in this amazing band, surely you have seen some supernatural happenings out there on the road. Has there never been a moment where you're like, what the fuck?
Luckily, we've been going for a long, long time.
Yes.
You know, and the very first time that we took my dad's old giant Plymouth with a trailer on the back, the very first time we went to L.A., we were on the border right as Arizona turns into California, and there was this bizarrely strange, blobby thing hovering way up in the dark sky. And for some reason, we were getting gas or doing something, and we marveled at this thing by ourselves on the side of the road, like, what is that?
Yeah.
Convinced, well, you know, maybe this is a UFO or whatever.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what it is. It's sure. A UFO to us.
Yeah.
And we thought about it, and, you know, back then there wasn't an internet, but you'd look at pictures and you'd see if anybody had said anything about it. And time went by, and, well, nothing was said about it. 2002, we were going to rehearsals with Beck. We're walking through a little part of where, I forget, is southern L.A., through, you know, where the studio was. We're going.
Yeah.
And we stop on a bridge, and this same thing is in the sky. And we all stop. And Beck stopped with us. And I remember us thinking, we're going to die. A UFO is going to explode over our heads. We're going to die with Beck right here on this bridge.
Cool.
He was included. Yeah. I think he started to run away like, fuck it, I'm not dying with flaming lips. But anyway, this thing, and Michael and I were the only ones, we had seen the thing, you know, 25 years earlier. We remembered, that's that thing that we saw. And it was coming. We didn't really know what it was. It didn't end up exploding and killing us, but we went to rehearsal and we wondered, what was it? So the next day on the front of the page of USA Today is a picture of this thing. And it's a missile that's being tested way out, 300 miles off the coast. But it's so big of a tail and so tall that we're in the dark and its reflection is still in the light that the sun is getting, even though we're in the dark, but it's so far up there. And it looks like it's just sitting there, but kind of moving. And
just a missile.
25 years later, what we thought was UFO, because of the sustained curiosity, we found out it was just a missile being tested. No aliens, no, but still, what a fascinating, insane, cool thing.
Yeah.
That this, and it's still fascinating. And I'm relieved that it wasn't a UFO. Now I have some explanation. Oh, I know what that is. That's cool.
Why are you relieved?
Because it's a mystery that I thought, well, what is that? Why did we see it? No one knows what that is. Well, people see it all the time. They just don't remark about it because it's normal to them. If you live out there, you see them. Oh, that they're testing a missile out there. No big deal.
Night after night, touring night after
night.
Right, running into so many, the entire spectrum of humanity.
No, not really, no. You mean like people, you mean like at truck stops or people at our shows?
I'm just on all this traveling.
Right.
You've never once crossed paths with a being or a group of people where you thought, whoa, these people are kind of enlightened, or this seems like some kind of advanced person. You've never, like, it just feels like with a
no. I mean we run into people all the time, but we think, are, man, they're cool, they're smart, and they're, man, they're but not like they're from outer space.
You've never had any kind of contact with anything, or you're like, I don't know, man, I feel like if night after night I'm going on stage, I'm Wayne Coyne, I'm going on stage, I'm getting in a ball, I'm rolling out into the audience. I mean, I from what I've read, you don't take psychedelics, and you've never
taken a few things. I mean, but it doesn't agree with me. I get too worried and too paranoid and too I lose too much of my responsibility.
But somewhere in the course of the touring, in there, I think I would start getting a little wobbly up in the old ticker.
No, you wouldn't. No, you'd be fun. You'd like it. It's not like that. I mean, it's not like that to us. We get to play our music.
You've never found yourself like. Have you ever struggled? You've never struggled with some kind of like messiah complex or some sense of, if this is happening to me.
No.
No.
I mean, not since I've been like more than 8 years old or something. You know what I mean?
Wow.
It's like, no. I mean, not being out there in the world. I mean, we want to play our music. I mean, we want to visit places. We want to, you know, we want people to come to our shows. They're not just drawn to us. I mean, we we put out records, we advertise, yeah. we make a, you know, we say, hey, we're here.
Yeah.
Hope you like us.
Gotcha.
It's not the other way around.
Gotcha.
You know, we're not just there and everybody shows up magically. Like,
that's incredible, man. I love it. This is amazing. You are such a focused.
But I think that's great. I think that's the way it should be, you know. I mean,
well, I think yeah. that's why you get to be what you are, is because you've maintained this state of equanimity. You have maintained balance in the midst of.
Thank you for saying, but I still think it's. I think that's better that we're all in it together. I'm not trying to say, you know, what I do is more important than you. It's just like, man, you need to be entertained just like I do. We'll entertain you tonight.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night it can be somebody else.
Yeah.
It can be Beyonce or Fugazi or whoever you like. You know, let's do it. You know, go see their movie. Go see their band. I'm just here tonight and it's great. I don't need to be a messiah or anything. You know, I can be the messiah tonight and tomorrow night Beyonce's butt can be the messiah. That sounds like a great world.
That's exactly the world I want to be
in. I know.
In,
I think we're already in that world. Yeah.
We are in that world. Yeah.
There's a new title for the podcast.
Beyonce's butt is the messiah.
Is the new messiah.
Beyonce's butt is the new messiah.
For tonight.
Tonight. Yeah. Okay, wait. Let's cut. Because we have two great titles.
Yeah.
One of them is Don't Feel Sorry for Bigfoot. The other is Beyonce's butt is the messiah. We're going to have to do a vote on this.
Beyonce's butt is the new messiah for tonight. See, I think that makes it a little bit, it's important, but. You know, we'll wake up and there'll be another one tomorrow. You know, I mean, if I have an overall theory of life is that, you know, everything that we do is like a meal, you know.
Mm.
You can't read about a meal. You people like to do that, but only because it's leading to the meal. You know, you can't read, you can't look at pictures of a meal and be, oh, I've done it. You know, you can't, it has to be the real thing.
Right.
But there's a lot of things in life that we don't know that. We don't know, oh, it's got to be the real thing. You know, so you have to, it's like seeing Beyonce's butt is like a meal. It's going to be good tonight, but you're going to wake up tomorrow. You're going to be hungry tomorrow. You can't just eat once and now I'm done. You have to eat again.
Yes.
And if you eat the same thing over and over, you might get curious about other things you might eat. Why not?
Yeah.
It's wonderful, you know, or accidentally find something else. But for now, the meal you're having right now is the greatest meal you're ever going to have. To me, sometimes when I get to go to sleep and you know you're tired, but you're aware enough that you're falling asleep.
Yes.
It's the greatest sleep ever.
Yes.
And you know you're going to do it tomorrow night and the next night. And
yeah.
if you're lucky for the next 100 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you don't, if that meal is just, I'm eating it just to fucking get done with my shit and get on with, if I'm sleeping just to wake up and get back to my shit, and if I'm spending time with you, but it's just to get back to my shit, it's like, you're already being buried, brother. This meal, this time with you, this is my greatest meal.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the truth. You know, you can only eat one meal at a time. You can only sleep in one bed at a time. You know.
Wayne?
But unlike you, I mean, you maybe have sex with several women at one time. I don't know. Not me.
I've never have. That's another podcast.
That is.
Wayne, tonight, you're the messiah for me, man. That
and,
was
and you
Jesus
for me. And you for me.
Me.
No, and you for me right now. I agree.
Beautiful.
That is. That's the truth. And that's all we need.
Thank you so much.
Man, I see why people like your podcast.
Oh, brother. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for listening, everybody. A big thank you to Wayne Coyne, The Flaming Lips, and Shelby for making that happen. Also, big thanks to Casper.com for sponsoring this episode. Remember, if you go to Casper.com/Family Hour, you'll get $50 towards a brand new mattress. If you enjoyed this episode, won't you please give us a nice rating on iTunes and subscribe to us? Thank you so much for listening, you guys. I love you, and I'll see you real soon. Hare Krishna.